Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Hello, you're welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. I'm delighted to say we have Paul Dunne coming into us in studio a little bit later on after his incredible performance at the Open Championship in St Andrews last weekend. Cork football manager Brian Cuthbert on the Munster defeat to Kerry and, more importantly now, preparations for Kildare this weekend. Mike Ross on training and preparing for the Rugby World Cup with the Ireland squad, and Gary Murphy is with me in studio as well. I should mention we have Jeff Shepherd on all things USA, including an interesting result for the USA soccer team last night. We'll talk more about that later on. 51552 for your text at GameOn2FM on Twitter. And you've got to be pretty happy for a couple of reasons. Number one, you've signed a brilliant striker in Christian Benteke.
Yeah.
With a pedigree of Aston Villa, which is always a good omen for Liverpool players. And Emiliano Grillo is 7 under par playing the last, your tip, for the, where are they playing in Canada?
Canadian Open, yeah. One of our players in Athena Sports Management, so it's a... I mean, he's hugely talented. He's only 22. He's a couple of starts in the States, top 10 last week. Got beaten in a playoff in Puerto Rico. And he's been very good Thursday to Saturday. So hopefully he can get four rounds this week.
Do you think he just needs to get over that line once and kind of get rid of that? It's perfectly understandable for a guy on a Sunday going to a position like that. He just needs to maybe get the job done once and that could be it.
Yeah, I think so. And perhaps even a lucky break too, because sometimes you can play really well for four rounds and someone's just a bit hotter. But it's a big start. He had some issues getting across the border with visas and that, and got it sorted out. And he's a hugely talented kid, and he's one that's going to be a big name for the future.
Christian Benteke, happy as a Liverpool fan?
Yeah, it's a lot of money, but he's only 24. And I actually... There was a thing on today on Liverpool FC. No, not that you'd follow that, but
no.
The team that finished,
I'm blocked.
The team that started against Stoke,
yeah.
And the team that could potentially start the league.
Oh, okay.
And it's frightening. I think Liverpool will win the league this year. You heard it on the 23rd of July, 2015.
Carl Holmes, the Greystones pro, is a Liverpool fan as well outside. I think he probably believes it as well. But
Carl will come in and talk the same sense that I'm talking.
And you're both out of your bloody minds. I think Arsenal actually have a great chance this year.
No, Liverpool.
42 goals in the Premier League since September 2012, Christian Benteke, for Liverpool fans who are just hearing the news that he has indeed signed. Only Robin van Persie, Luis Suarez and Sergio Aguero have scored more.
I know, going to win the league.
He's definitely not a last minute Mario Balotelli signing anyway.
The only thing, he did have a couple of injuries and might be a bit of a worry, but
sick note.
You know, I think you can't look at the money, because the money is ridiculous anyway. You know, there's none of them worth.
But you know what, the point being made today, and this is an interesting one, actually the money from the new television deal has yet to properly kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happens, the speculation is that the money is going to go from crazy what it is now to completely off the charts ludicrous. So 35 million might actually seem like a drop in the pond. And you got to, I suppose, contrast it against what other guys are going for, and that's the market value for someone like him.
Yeah, well, he's a proven goal scorer. He's only 24, and they've got him for, 15 million cheaper than they sold Raheem Sterling for.
Exactly.
Who's a jinky winger, really.
It's a vote of confidence in Brendan Rodgers, the amount of money that Liverpool are spending, that the owners are giving him.
Or else lunacy. One or the other.
No joy for Dundalk against Bade Borisov last night. Did you manage to catch any of this?
It was a pity, wasn't it?
It really was. Yeah. I had a feeling yesterday that this was going to be their night. They were going to do it. And when the game started, they started really positively as the team selection. Alan Cawley went through it and said, look, they're going to attack. They did that. Borisov, though, they just had more chances. Unlucky not to score on a few occasions. And you could see a disappointed Dundalk players, fans, Stephen Kenny was afterwards.
Yeah, and it's rare seeing nil all draw in that, in that kind of environment with what's at stake, but it was a pity. But I mean, he's doing a wonderful
job. He's doing an
incredible
job.
But, you know, the big thing is the European football. That's where the real cash is. It's a pity.
Did you see, I mean, we had Graham Byrne in with us on Tuesday. Did you see the size of those? That's why you're in such bad form all day.
Exactly.
Did you see the size of the Dundalk players? Their upper body strength, the muscles coming bursting through their shirts there. I'd say they were fitted at the start of last season. They haven't changed sizes since then. Serious shape, those lads. UCD and Shamrock Rovers both in action tonight. Shamrock Rovers No score when last I checked. I'll have an update of that in just 2 minutes' time. They're against Odd Ball Club in Norway. They're 2-0 down, though, after the first leg in Tala. So a massive mountain to climb there. Let's go to UCD, though, because they're in action against Slovan Bratislava in Belfield. And John Kenny is there. Hey, John.
How you doing, Hugh? Yeah, mountain to climb here as well. Slovan Bratislava lead by 2-0 on the night, and that's 3-0 on aggregate. Slovan, as you would expect, good side. Bulk of the chances thus far. But UCD and Fairnstone, they've had a couple of chances in the first half, especially. Chris Mulhall went close in the fifth minute with a shot from the edge of the area, which had the Bratislava keeper, John Muka, diving away to his right-hand side. Ryan Swan, scorer of 2 goals thus far in the competition, also had Muka saving his 19th minute effort. But then Bratislava really took control. The captain, Marco Milinkovic, and close on a couple of occasions, once with a dipping free kick. And Adam Zrilak brought out a great save from the UCD keeper Niall Corbett just after the half hour. But the pressure finally told on UCD 4 minutes before the half time break. Robert Zitak heading in after 41 minutes, and that made it 1-0 on the night and 2-0 on aggregate. So UCD at that stage needed to score 3. Now they need to score 4, because 3 minutes into the second half, Milinkovic waltzed his way into the penalty area and just slid the ball home nice and easy. So UCD has been a good adventure for them so far, but looks like they're heading out. We've got 9 minutes gone in the second half. They're 2-0 down and 3-0 down on aggregate.
What's the crowd like, John, just as a matter of interest? Because Tony O'Donoghue has been at pains to point out that the crowds don't normally turn out for UCD. If they can come out for a night like this, you wonder whether they ever will.
Well, yeah, it's the sand is full on the far side. There's a little pocket of Slovan Bratislava fans away to our right-hand side, but the rest is all UCD fans in the three sections which they are occupied. Good to see. You can't actually stand, as you know, in European games, so there's nobody standing on the banks around the ground. But yeah, good crowd in, enjoying the football. It's a lovely, lovely venue, I must say. The pitch is in fantastic nick. Slovan Bratislava.
Okay, the line's just gone there. John Kenny, though, at UCD, and as you heard as well, it's a lot to climb. Nil all of Shamrock Rovers as well, away to the Norwegian side, Odd Ball Club. Competition to tell you about to celebrate the launch of the fastest ever Boyle Sports mobile app. We're giving away a VIP day at the Galway races on Wednesday, the 29th of July, for 2 people. So the prize includes 4-star overnight accommodation. This is next Wednesday, by the way. VIP hospitality tickets to the race itself, should be a cracking one as well. Over 18s only for this one, and you have to be guaranteed to get the day off work next week. Here's the question for today. What day of the week-long Galway Racing Festival is traditionally Ladies' Day? So which day of the week in Galway is Ladies' Day? Let us know by texting 51552 with your name and the answer and where you're from. We'll have 5 winners tonight, all going through to the hat, and we'll have our final winner with that prize tomorrow evening. So you can tune in tomorrow night and we'll let you know who the overall winner is. Best of luck. Okay. Gaelic Games now. Cork football manager Brian Cuthbert is on the line ahead of this weekend's championship match against Kildare. Firstly, Brian, how are the bodies after the game against Kerry on Saturday night? Everyone okay and ready to go?
Yeah, I think everybody's okay. It's a short turnaround, definitely, but I suppose from a physical point of view, I think guys are at the stage where they're well able to just turn and go again, you know?
Yeah, I think I saw Colin O'Rourke mention that there was something like a 90% failure rate for teams with a 6-day turnaround, but obviously you didn't pin that up on the dressing room wall, and that's, you know, it's one of those things where you can argue both cases, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose you can look at it two ways. I suppose you can look and say it's a very quick turnaround, but at the same time, it doesn't give you too much time to dwell on disappointment of a must final replay loss. And I suppose the way I look at it at the moment, you as I say, certainly it doesn't give me much time to dwell on a disappointment of a must final loss and just get going to get ready again, you know.
What was the reaction on Saturday? Because, look, I watched both games, and given how well Cork played in the first match, how much criticism there was of that Kerry penalty decision that never should have been. Yeah. Was it difficult for you to take, Brian, on Sunday, maybe reflecting on it?
I suppose, look, if you were to be honest, you'd like to think that the way you look at it is turning it the other way around and say that the team did perform quite well in 2 games, but we end up with nothing out of it. So there's a big disappointment there, you. But at the same time, I suppose, because this match is coming so quickly, I haven't had the real time to actually dwell on it and to say, you know, I'm massively disappointed, yes. You could say a tiny bit frustrated, maybe, that we didn't perform as well as we could have the second day. And I suppose, look, we just find ourselves in the situation we're in now and just have to make most of it.
So maybe it's actually a good thing that this match is coming down the road so quickly.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That's certainly the way I look at it today. It really, really hasn't given us much time to be disappointed. And it's just completely focused our mind on another challenge.
We had Jason Ryan on the show a couple of weeks ago after Kildare's last win against Longford, and he mentioned the momentum that they had built up since that Dublin defeat. And I suppose that's not something that you guys have right now, but a win this weekend, Brian, and all of a sudden the Kerry match is a distant memory.
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, it's all about the next match with you, and I think the fact that, you know, we're Kildare, we know they're a very, very good team. Because they've had, you know, two good games since the Dublin game, and they're on their road now. And I suppose they'd be looking at it as if the exact same, that if they can get over Cork, it certainly would be a big flip for them to head back to Cork to Dublin again. But I suppose the biggest thing for us, if we can get over this game, we're back where we want to be, back at the August Bank on the weekend, and certainly we'd have three games, 3 weeks in a row under our belt, and we'd like to think that we'd be in a good place.
And I, you know, maybe that's something that some people forget, because, you know, it's nice to have a provincial title as a manager, I imagine, you know, but that's not the ultimate goal here, I imagine, for someone like yourself, that actually one more win and you're back in the same position as Kerrier.
Yeah, I suppose, look, you know, there's a lot made of you know, winning the Munster Championship in terms of the draw, that side of the draw that you would be on, and in disrespectful to any other teams, but, you know, it seems that everybody wants to avoid the Dubs for a while. Yeah. But, you know, as I said to you, this is the side we find ourselves on now, and it's completely about us, you know, being in the right place on Saturday evening and, you know, representing our county the way we can and you know, trying to overcome this game. And, you know, if we can do that, we're moving ourselves forward and we're back into where we want to be all along.
Mick Slocum's article in the Irish Examiner today made a good point. I mean, you know, he said, like, for teams like Donegal and Tyrone in the past, going through the front door or the back door doesn't really matter to them. I mean, it just it makes very little difference to the ultimate goal, which is to get as far as you can in the championship itself. Is that kind of how you view things?
I suppose it's all relative, really. When you're in the Munster Championship, you want to win it.
Sure.
When you're in Clarny and you're, you know, a point up with time up, you want to win it. You know, and the same last Saturday night, we wanted to win it. I suppose when you don't win it, then you'll just have to realign the goalposts slightly and just say, right, that's the end of that competition. We're on to the next competition. I think Derek McGrath was saying the same after the last one's final. He said, that's the end of that competition. You know, we're in the league final. We're in the Munster final. Now we're into the last competition of the year, and this is the big one.
How do the players feel about everything that's happened over the last 3 weeks? It's been a bit of a blur, a bit of a whirlwind, if you like, but how do the lads feel about it?
I think, you know, they obviously are very disappointed that we didn't succeed last Saturday night. That's number one. I think number two, certainly by Tuesday of this week, their heads will come around to, you know, facing a big challenge this Saturday. And, you know, we're training tonight, Thursday night, and I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how we move down another small bit and making sure that we're ready for Saturday. And I think the players, to be honest, much the same as what we've discussed so far, is the fact that this is a big opportunity that, you know, if we can perform to our maximum, and if we can win this game, we're back in the melting pot.
You know, anyone who's played sport at any level will understand that match fitness is something you can't buy on a training ground. And, you know, for you guys to have a couple of games under your belt now, you've another one coming straight down the road.
Yeah.
You always want to peak at the right time of the season, Brian, is the cliche, but it's true. And if you're going to continue to kind of build on performances with that match fitness under your belt, then obviously Cork have a huge amount of scope to improve.
Yeah, but I suppose you only get the opportunity to test that one out when you get there, and that's the thing, I suppose. The big thing is that, you know, all of the talk, you know, since the most final replay to now has been, you know, will Cork mentally build themselves up to the challenge, will they be physically able to do it? And I think you overcome it, those questions are answered. You don't overcome it, and those questions are answered. So it's really a bit of, we'll see when we get there, kind of thing. But at the same time, I know my players very, very well. I know they see this as an opportunity. I know they see this as a huge challenge against a very, very good team. And I think, you know, they see it for what it is, and really, really, they know they have to be at their best to win this game.
Because you know the guys so well, does it annoy you and frustrate you, this lack of leaders' criticism that has been levelled at the Cork team? It's almost getting ridiculous. But, I mean, does that really frustrate you because you know the guys that you're dealing with week in, week out?
I suppose, look, it does frustrate me, but it certainly doesn't make me angry. It's the fact that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's very easy to bandy about cliches, and this Cork team seemed to be a team that people like to knock down. But as I said, I've seen them grow up. I watched a lot of these guys playing football for a long time. I know who they are. I know their families, and they're certainly, you know, they don't lack character. And I just think they just need to get over the line against one of these big teams. And once they do that, maybe some of this criticism would be levied on some other team.
Mm. I mean, have you any idea why this is used? I mean, it doesn't seem to, as you say, like, it seems to be a focus on Cork to try and, as a stick to try and beat you guys with. And
yeah. Well, I suppose, look, to be fair, you know, certainly I'd have to hold my hands up in terms of the last year and a half. And we've had, you know, the month's final last year was quite disappointing, and it's quite easy to see why someone would levy you know, lack of leadership on that performance. But I think, you know, to be fair, you know, we got a lot of things wrong, myself included, for that game. The league final this year, we didn't perform. You know, again, it's very easy to add 1-1 together and get two and see. Mm. You know, that this is, you know, the criticism is warranted sometimes, but at the same time, you know, I think this team is still developing. This team is still growing, and you know, we've a lot of very, very good young players in the team, and it's going to take them a while before, you know, that they're at their best. But at the same time, I think the team showed in the first day, certainly against Kerry, that they're quite capable of playing very, very good football. And, you know, as I say, I think we just need one big win.
Have you had much time to look at Kildare this week? And what's the plan, if you don't mind me asking? Well, you don't have to tell me what the plan is, but how are you approaching this one?
I've seen Kildare a lot. They were in Division 1 last year with Jason. We played them in actually our second game, I'd say. You know, they're much the same players over the last two years, certainly. You know, obviously, like any week of preparation, we've seen a lot of footage of them, and you know, I think you know, when they play, they're quite impressive, and certainly the second day against Laois in the league play, they had a spell after half time where that probably was Laois at their best at any point in this season, and I think Jason and Kildare people will be looking for more of that, and if they do bring more of that, it's going to cause anybody problems. But at the same time, you know, I think with ourselves, our focus is completely on us bringing about our best performance. And, you know, I'd like to think that our best performance is a good performance, and that might cause Kildare problems as well.
And there's no better way to park that Kerry match and to answer any kind of criticism than going out and doing a job this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's a means to an end right now. We'd love to have, as I said to you earlier on, we'd love to have won the Munster Championship, but that didn't happen. This is our only way of progressing, and you know, it means that this weekend is our All-Ireland final right now, and we have to go after this game with everything we have. And you know, I think, as I say, questions can be answered after the game when we see the team perform. But right now, I think the team's in a very, very good place and extremely determined to do well.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Brian. Look, best of luck with this weekend and with everything else that comes after that. And look, hopefully we'll chat soon. Thanks a million for your time.
No problem, you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian Cooper there. Interesting stuff. Sorry about that. I pressed the wrong button there. Cork should account for Kildare on paper, but that six-day turnaround figure that Colm O'Rourke mentioned, there's a 90% failure rate for sides who have to deal with that short turnaround. And you just wonder how much their heads are wrecked by what happened against Kerry.
Yeah, they probably are, but the fact that, you know, they know going into provincial championships that they're, you know, it's not last chance saloon. So
no.
I mean, the goal is Croke Park in September. That's Sam Maguire is the goal more than anything. I mean, but I think the fact that it's their second game against Kerry, they're going to be, you know, match sharp, and they should have way too much for Kildare.
Yeah, you would imagine. Some cracking games going on this weekend. We'll continue our coverage and preview tomorrow night on the show. I want to go over to UCD in Belfield, though, because there has been a goal in that match. John Kenny, hopefully it's gone to the home side.
It has. Ryan Swan, who scored goals against Dundalaj, scored two goals against Dundalaj from the knock them out in the last round, has scored one in 57 minutes. So credit to UCD. They're still needing three more goals to get through against Slovan Bratislava, who lead 2-1 on the night and 3-1 in aggregate. But Swan got in on goal and did the needful, past the Slovan keeper Muka. So a bit of pride, I think, from UCD, who are playing well in the second half despite their the fact that Slovan Bratislava are a much better side. And the shot comes in from one of the UCD players, Robbie Benson. That flashes just wide. So They're ending on a high here. We've got 22 minutes gone in the second half, and they got one back. Ryan Swan, 57 minutes. It's 2-1 to Slovan Bratislava, and they lead 3-1 on aggregate.
Super stuff, John. Thanks a million for that. We'll keep you posted on the full-time score. Still scoreless in Shamrock Rovers' match in Norway, I should let you know. Peter Lorry shot, what, 67 today?
67-300, yeah. They've changed the par from 70 to 71. Or from 71 to 70, rather. And good start. Another good invite.
Yeah. But he's building up a few quid now. If he can turn this one, no?
No, he need. Yeah, I mean, he's won, I think, 134 in the order of merit, so he needs...
Another, at least that?
Yeah, same. He needs, yeah, at least about 120 grand. But, I mean, he nearly shot 59 around here last year.
Yeah.
He had it going. But big invite, and he's, you know, taking advantage of it so far. He can only play it one round at a time.
That's it?
But it's... It's getting close now because the opportunities are going to taper down a little bit because he has had a lot of starts, and it'll be, you know, top 10 is a goal. If he gets top 10, he gets in the following week.
You'd imagine, I mean, he's going to go to Q School, if he doesn't get that amount to retain his, or to get his card back for next year. And if he repeats what happened last year, he'll be relying on invites again. Will the committees and the tour and those responsible be as generous a second year in a row for someone who hasn't got their card?
No, but the thing, if he just gets there or thereabouts, he'll get about 10 or 12 starts from that category anyway, even if he didn't get his card, whereas last season, he was so far down the list, he had no, you know, tournaments to get into this year from his, the only category he had was missing his card at Tour School, which isn't great.
Mm.
But, you know, should he, I mean, the thing is, he's still competitive to keep playing, keep focused, you know, keep that desire there. It's hard, you're getting knocked the whole time, but... He's got to keep that desire, and he's, you know, he seems to be up for the fight, and hopefully he can just catch a break. You know, the confidence is the hardest thing at the moment for Peter, is trying to capture the unknown, that intangible thing of confidence.
Yeah.
Tiger doesn't have it, so it's
no.
It's not easy, but it's a big week for him this week.
Okay, we have two pairs of tickets, I should say, to give away to Sunday's All-Ireland Hurling Quarterfinals in Semple Stadium, Crackers as well, but thanks to Etihad Airways. All you got to do is name the Cork hurling manager. Simple as that. Text your answer and your name to 51552. We'll have a winner in, what, 10 minutes' time. Stay tuned, though, because we have Mike Ross coming up after the break.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Okay, you're welcome back. 51552 for your text. To mark the launch of the new Irish rugby jerseys, Lifestyle Sports has announced that should the Irish team become world champions on October 31st, it'll refund anyone who buys the new Irish rugby jersey in Lifestyle Sports this weekend, as the 24th, the 25th or the 26th of July. If you're optimistic about Ireland's chances of claiming that Webb Ellis trophy, this weekend's the perfect time to buy a jersey in Lifestyle Sports. With that in mind, I'm delighted to welcome Ireland international and, of course, Leinster prop Mike Ross to the show. Mike, you're very welcome, first of all. How is training going for you and the rest of the players at the moment, pre-season? Are you enjoying it?
Been pretty entertaining.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah. They're flogging us hard enough, as you'd expect, you know, given the year that's in it. So, but thankfully it's going to be brief enough because we've got games coming up, starting with away to Wales next month.
Does it get any, I mean, you've been playing professional rugby for a long time, Mike. Does it get any easier this pre-season, flogging you to death stuff before the game start?
Not really, but I have noticed over the years that they've gotten a bit smarter about how they do it. You know, it's not just mindless. There's actually, you know, rationale behind it. And you're not running endless laps like you used to back when I started.
Okay. And what kind of differences then would you be talking about now as opposed to maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago?
Probably shorter and more intense. You know, I mean, in games you'd rarely run over 100 metres at one go, so the training could be tailored around that.
And within that then, do they cater specifically more for you, say, as a tight head prop, or even just for the front row versus second row versus backs?
Yeah, well, happily they ask us to run less distance, you know. So you might have to cover, you know, 70 metres in every 15 seconds, and like the back five might have to cover 85 to 90 metres.
Okay.
So, you know, they do recognise there's a bit of a difference that way.
I mean, it does seem such a short time since the last season finished up, and, you know, we've had a few interviews, talked to Bernard Jackman recently as well about, you know, the time is only 3 or 4 weeks before you're back into it. Like, how is your body, how are you feeling personally yourself at the moment? Are you feeling up for it and ready to go for the World Cup?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, the 4 weeks to get off does allow any little niggles to gradually dissipate, you know, because it's not actually training that hurts you, it's the contact, you know. So if it, you get about 8 to 10 weeks off of contact, and that really makes a big difference.
Because you're at the age you are now, and this, you know, could well be your last World Cup, does it make it any more enjoyable for you just trying to savour the moment as opposed to, is there anything else? Or have you come into it with that mindset to try and enjoy this all the more?
I try and enjoy every day of training, you know, as it comes. You know, I mean, especially when it's sunny outside, you're running around out in the grass and you're thinking, God, I could be inside in an office, you know. Yeah. So you try and cherish it. And, you know, there's a big car too, and that's getting on the plane for the World Cup. So we'll have to do that next month. You know, there's 4 warm-up games. Well, they're not really warm-up games, they're test matches, really. Mm. So, and there'll be, like, everyone will be in the same situation, all the different squads, everyone trying to get on the plane.
Has Joe kind of outlined what he expects from everybody in terms of those 4 games? Is he going to give as many people a chance to make that claim for the plane as possible?
He hasn't outlined it yet. I imagine that everyone in the squad will get an opportunity. You know, so it's up to you then once you get your opportunity to take it.
Okay. What about the news yesterday that he's committed himself for, you know, another year in terms of the RFU?
I mean, it's great news. I think, you know, he's been an outstanding coach for Leinster and Ireland, and, you know, his results kind of speak for themselves.
Have you noticed a difference in him over the last few years in terms of, say, the guy that first came into Leinster versus the guy that's coaching Ireland now? Has he changed much?
He still is intense as ever, but I think he's learned to relax a bit now and then, you know. Mm. Not too much, but it probably, you know, when you go into the role, you're kind of adjusting and you find your feet, and, you know, he's had 5 or 6 years now with us, so, you know, I think he's achieved that.
That intensity that you talk of, it's something that I've heard quite a few guys speak of. Have you had any kind of your own personal experiences where you'll remember a kind of an incident with Joe that I suppose typifies that intensity that you're talking about?
Yeah, I remember when he first came into Leinster, and we were doing a video review of a pre-season game, and he turned around and started laying into me for not catching a winger. And I was looking at going, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I mean, that guy, I mean, I could have roller skates on, that fella still be quicker than me. Yeah. And he said, but no, if you had ran a bit harder here, you know, when his mate got the ball, then when he got the ball, you'd have been in a position to tackle him. And, you know, I looked at it and he was right. I couldn't really argue with it. So, you know, it's that type of thing he brings. You know, he expects you to be working hard all the time, and he likes, you know, he's saying he likes, you know, smarter, harder, earlier. You know, just be in the position. If you work harder and smarter, you'll be there earlier, and that's pretty much what he's about.
That's a brilliant philosophy to have. I hadn't actually heard that one before.
Yeah.
You know, if you gauge yourself, even Mike, I suppose over the last kind of 6-7 years, do you feel that you have improved as a player as a result of what Joe's done?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, lads will often joke that when you're running around the pitch, you've got Joe on your shoulder, yelling in your ear. You know, because it does. You know, it sticks with you. I mean, if you make a bad clean-out or something, you can hear him yelling at you. So that, you know, it certainly makes you better as a player and makes you pay attention to the little things that make the big things work.
And I suppose, you know, not every player responds to that kind of coaching. I mean, but I guess you just have to adapt and do what he's asking you to do to stay in the squad and to be part of his plans. It's just a simple reality, really.
Like, he doesn't want you to go out and be a hero. He doesn't expect you to, like, you know, pull off amazing, you know, plays. Mm. But he does expect you to know your role exactly and be a small cog on the big wheel that makes everything work.
Just for you, I know, look, you've got a family outside and obviously your own life. Being kind of involved in this kind of a camp before World Cup, long hours with the guys and stuff, is it difficult in one sense, you know, being away from the family and stuff, or how does that work?
Yeah, it can be, but, you know, it hasn't been too, like, this pre-season hasn't been too bad because you know, we get a bit of time at home too, and a time in our own beds. Whereas, you know, I think some other times you might be away for 3 months at a stretch when it comes to World Cup. You know, that's quite hard, especially in guys that have families. Sure. And I think the approach you're taking has been pretty good from that point of view.
Kane Douglas news today. I just ask you quickly for your reaction to this. He's leaving Leinster. I mean, it's a bit of a surprise in a sense because, you know, he hasn't been there for too long. What do you make of this?
Yeah. It's a pity because he's a quality player and everyone liked him, you know. But at the same time, I think he's had a bit of a tug of love, you know. Mm. And it's quite hard to be stuck in the middle of that, especially when your country's calling. Mm. And I don't think anyone has any hard feelings towards him going when he does, but he'll be a hard man to replace.
Okay, well, look, we wish you the best with the rest of the training. Hope it's not too bad. And, of course, when the matches get in, I suppose it'll get easier. But for the World Cup as well, Mike, you know, given that, as I say, it probably will be your last, best of luck with everything and hope it goes great.
All right, thanks very much.
Mike Ross there. Just on rugby, the annual Midlands Midnight Sevens take place again this year in Tullamore Rugby Football Club on Saturday the 25th. So that's this Saturday, basically. Ireland's first and only Midnight Rugby Sevens tournament features the men's elite, the men's social, under 18 boys and the under 18 girls and ladies competition. So something for everyone if you fancy going along. Bit of crack as well. Tournament commences with the under 18 youths. That's at 10:30 to 2. The adult competition's played off from mid-afternoon right through until midnight. Camping is free and most teams I think generally choose to stay over and have a bit of crack. Rugby crack till from midnight till dawn. So yeah, give it a shot. Tullamore this weekend should be good. Best luck with everything, or everyone I should say, involved in that. Okay, 51552 for your text messages. Shamrock Rovers now 3-0 down on aggregate, including conceding a goal tonight, so they're in big trouble, and as I heard, UCD as well up against it. So stay tuned, we've Paul Dunn live in studio after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Okay, you're very welcome back. I'm delighted to welcome Paul Dunn back into studio after an amazing Open Championship in St Andrews. Greystones pro Carl Holmes is also with us, and it's great to have you both here, lads.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
I know, pleasure. Listen, last weekend was incredible for everyone that watched you. I'm just wondering, you've had a few days now to kind of just soak it in. How do you feel about the whole thing now?
Kind of mixed emotions, really. I wasn't expecting to be going out in the final group, or the final few groups, even on the Sunday, and the final group on the last day. Mm-hmm. So, disappointed with the result the last day, but overall pretty satisfied with the week and the exposure it got me. So
yeah, I think you can judge most things these days by how many followers you get on Twitter. So how many do you reckon you got over the last 5 days?
I went from 1,100 to 23,100, so I went up a little bit. Yeah, but I just had to turn the notifications off on the phone, otherwise I wouldn't be going to sleep at night.
Most of those 20,000 were from me, by the way. Look, there has to be so many more positives than negatives. I know, look, as you say, the final round, we'll come back to that in a little bit, but overall, I mean, you must be hugely proud of what you managed to do.
Yeah, it was nice and reassuring to know that when I play well, it can put me up there on a leaderboard like that. I was playing well going into it, really, though. I played well in the three practice rounds I played, and I didn't have any expectations to go out and win the tournament, but I was expecting to play well, and yeah, just the attention that it got as the week went on, kind of I wasn't expecting, but it was a great week, you know, great experience going forward, and hopefully it won't be the last time.
Absolutely not. Carl, I mean, you watched the practice rounds that Paul played in. Did you get a sense, watching him hit the ball, that actually, hang on, there could be something special coming up here?
Yeah, I mean, and I followed him on Tuesday and Wednesday, and to be honest, I mean, I think Paul say, I mean, he drove the ball incredibly well. And I think if Paul drives the ball well, he plays well. Because the rest of his game is always very good. His short game is exceptional, and his putting is the same. I think, Dennis Pugh walked around, David Ledbetter walked around. They were kind of playing they were out watching a few of their players. And after four or five holes, kind of just watching them, you could tell they kind of thought, who's this kid? You know, he's... This is he's special, you know, and he obviously played great. And as I said to Alan, like Murray, his caddy, afterwards, I said if he doesn't know how good he was coming into this week, he certainly knows how good he is now, because I mean, he played with Molinari, I mean, Ryder Cup player, played a couple of holes with Adam Scott. Like, I mean, I think he played with probably 10 players, and every one of those players have won. They've won on one of the tours. So And if you came down, and I'm not being biased here, but if you didn't know any of the names and you just saw him playing, like, Paul outplayed every group that he played with in practice. So I think, you know, going back, I kind of thought, God, he's going to have a seriously good week. So it was pretty special to witness. All right,
I'd say it was, and it was even being back here. I mean, we had you in studio when you qualified, and you said you expected it to be a different experience to your first time last year. Was it that case? Did you feel more comfortable when you went over there first?
Yeah, well, as soon as I got there, I knew what to expect, and I was out there just to kind of learn the course and get my game ready. I wasn't kind of too caught up in everything that went around, you know, with the tournament that was in it. But I got my practice done, I got my strategy for the course ready, and I was ready to get going by Thursday rather than last year kind of being caught up in the whole thing. But I guess the experience I had last year not being ready for it kind of carried over, and this year it was the same on Monday, because last year I had the experience of playing the Open and I was prepared for it, and then this year I had the experience playing the last group on the last round, which I'd never had before. And I guess I just, well, looking back on it, I probably just wasn't mentally ready for it.
Were you nervous? I know you said after the final round on Monday that you weren't nervous, but I was thinking to myself, you wouldn't be human if you weren't a bit, oh my God.
I was nervous, but I wasn't any more nervous than I was the previous three rounds. The first round, like, and the second and the third round, I was just as nervous going out. But I got off to really settled starts. You know, I got under par early and saw a lot of good shots coming on the course that I'd been seeing on the range. So it kind of just made me settle down and play my game. And then, but the last round, I just hit a couple shots that I hadn't seen myself hit either ever or in a long time. You know, so that kind of just rattled me, and I never really settled into the round. So I'd say that was the big difference between the fourth round and the first three.
What do you put those shots down to? I mean, was it just, that's what happened? It's just one of those things you're going, God, what a time to do this. Or was it anything particularly? Did you feel yourself maybe a little bit stiffer than the three previous days?
No, what was interesting was the range session I had before the last round, and how I was putting on the putting green was better than any other day I'd been there. So
really?
So I was quite excited to get going. But once I got down the first fairway, in the third round, I could see the face of the wedge kind of shaking a little bit when I was standing over it. I remember thinking, God, I'm going to miss this ball.
Really?
And I hit it into about 2 feet and made three. And it really settled me down. But I had the exact same feeling then in the wedge shot into the first, in the fourth round. I just hit a terrible shot. And I'm convinced that if I did what I did the third round, the fourth round, and just had managed to hit it close and make it three, I would have settled down and played much better. But that's obviously hindsight. Looking back on things like that, it's hard to say. But I never really got mentally into the round, and yeah, it was a little disappointing.
Even when you came back, when you got those two birdies back to put yourself back to where you started from, did Alan say anything to your caddy? Did you say anything to yourself, okay, just put those holes out, I'm back where I started and I can actually go and attack this course now? How did you feel?
Not really. We were just playing every hole as it came. Yeah, I made a nice birdie on 3 and 5 to get back to level. But the way the weather was going, it was getting worse as the day went on, and we knew the back nine would be really tough. Back into the wind, like, you weren't going to pick shots up on the back nine. You was just kind of holding on. And so I got to level through 5, but I still needed a few birdies before I got to 12. And I gave myself great looks on 6, 7, and 9 and didn't make any of them. So once I was level through 9, I knew it was a really uphill battle coming in, and bogey and 10 downwind kind of really put the nail in the coffin. Like, one over through 10, I needed to shoot 3 under. Like, shooting 4 under on those last 7 holes was nearly impossible in that wind.
How much of a difference did it have with Alan being there by your side throughout it? I imagine Colley's pretty upset that his professional caddy career is gone now that he was dropped, but your dad. But look, how much of an influence was Alan over the course of the week?
Yeah, he was brilliant. You know, he's watched me play for the last 4 years every day, whether it's practice or in a tournament, so he knows my game better than anybody. And he's had the playing experience himself as well, so he kind of knows what someone does and doesn't want to hear, and then he knows personally what I like to hear as well. So
what do you like to hear, as a matter of interest?
Well, we kind of just had it that just before, when I was taking my practice swings all week, he just reminded me of what my target was, And then just as I was walking into the ball, all he'd say is just commit to your shot, because we had something going all week that we can handle hitting bad shots if we commit to them. But if you try steer it down there, or I don't know, just guide one out and then hit a bad shot, it stings a lot more. So that's all we were saying all week, really. Once we got our lines and strategy done off the tee in the practice rounds, and that was pretty much it.
Louis Westhuizen seemed very relaxed with you and you with him on that third round, and then I was wondering, you know, the fact that you were together playing that last round as well, that must have been a nice bonus as well, because he seemed to get on very well together. That's just my perception looking on camera.
Yeah, he's a really relaxed guy to play with. He never really seems like he's trying too hard. He's just out there playing and he's just really good.
Yeah,
he just doesn't hit many bad shots.
And he used to be like that, apparently. Apparently he was a demon to play with for years, and then eventually, I don't know what he did, anger management course or something.
I don't know. Him and his caddy were both really nice guys. He didn't say much on the Sunday, the third round, for a while. And then as we got through 7 or 8 holes, he opened up a bit and we started chatting. And it was just quite a comfortable grouping, really, just like the first two rounds were. But it was good to play with him on the Sunday. It was strange for me to see someone that was like about to win a tournament, or looked like he had a great chance to win, being so relaxed, and just, it was like he was out playing on his own. So
Colin Byrne writes his caddy's diary for the Irish Times most weeks, and he made the point that you will have learned more over the last week than 4 years in Alabama, than a lifetime on the driving range, and especially with the career that is now ahead of you. Do you agree with that, that you've learned so much?
I don't think I can answer that without getting in the situation again and seeing if it helped me. It's easy to say what you learned, but whether it's true or not, or whether it'll help you going in the future, is something I can only tell you next time I'm in a situation like that. But hopefully it does. Hopefully I can handle it. Like the experience I had last year starting the Open, and then I took to it much better this year. Hopefully it'll be like that this way. Next time I get in that situation, I can learn from this and take to it quite quickly.
Gary, you were blown away by what you saw from Paul.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I just remember I was down in my cousin's house on Monday at about 12 o'clock, just looking at the TV, and I kept looking at my phone and seeing his name at the top of the leaderboard. And I guess the fact that I've kind of been there and played it, you realise how the enormity of what he was doing. And I was sick with tension more than anything, because I just wanted, you know, I've been in situations where I've been extremely nervous and it's affected my performance, but I was, you know, I've never been in that position where, you know, I've been at tour school and stuff, but it was just the excitement of the day and regardless of anything, I mean, this history made. I mean, Joe Carr's name was mentioned. Like, Paul is, if people have to remember, he's an amateur golfer. Joe Carr is our most famous amateur of all time, and Paul did something that Joe Carr never did. And he said that an amateur had the lead of the 54 holes in the Open Championship, or had the lead on a Sunday night at the Open. It's just a pity that it finished on a Monday. So I was just amazed and delirious with the fact that, you know, an Irish guy was doing what he did.
Did you sleep okay on Sunday night?
Yeah, I slept grand. I woke up a few times during the night, but nothing crazy. I never sleep in too much. I always get up about 8, but then I can go back to sleep easily. But I'm not one that can sleep straight through to 11. So
yeah.
But I slept just like I did. I wasn't tense or too nervous or anything. I just never got into the round like I did in the previous days. And so just a few shots I saw that I wasn't used to seeing kind of made the difference for the rest of the day. But when you're in there, it did just feel like another tournament. There was just a lot more people there, and I was comfortable on the golf course and comfortable with the surroundings. So
did you enjoy coming in, the fact that you were, you know, you kind of race had run a little bit and Louis was there, you know, trying to get in the playoff? Was it, could you, you know, I know you had a situation, someone shouted, did they, on your second shot on 18?
Yeah, that was blown a bit out of proportion. I mean, they shouted when I was over the ball, but I just backed off and then hit it and just hit a bad shot. It wasn't like it was his fault.
Okay.
Yeah, it's unlike the papers to go completely over the top and blame some random punter in the crowd. Like,
No, because someone shouted or put off Jordan Spieth before he hit his shot.
Yeah, that's right, actually, yeah.
And we're just curious if it was the same guy, but Did you get a sense of where you were almost on the last green when and what was happening? Was it the fact that the pressure was kind of off? Could you absorb the situation?
Yeah, well, once I got through 10, once I bogeyed 10 to be one over through 10, I knew my chances of winning were kind of out the window, and it kind of was a bit of a deflating feeling, really. So, yeah, it was just a bit of a mental scramble, really, the whole way in. I enjoyed 18, the walk-up 18, yeah, but the walk-up 17 and 18 in the third round were probably the most enjoyable time for me during that week. But we walked off the 18th tee in the last round, and Louis put his arm around me and was telling me to keep my head up, and you've played great this week. And then he pushed me up the bridge to walk up first, which I thought was really classy move from someone who needed three to get into a playoff.
Wow. That's amazing. If somebody is going for the playoff, needs to birdie the last and does that. And I heard that that Jordan Speed came up to you as well after the last round. Did he come over to you?
Yeah, when I came out with the media, he came up and just shook my hand and said, well played. And a lot of people did, though. And then I saw him again in the locker room, just general chat. But yeah, a lot of people were coming up. I got a lot of great support off the players, which was nice.
Because there is this perception that golf, obviously we talk about this all the time, it's such an individual game that guys have to be out for themselves. They have to fight the field and the golf course, and that just, you know, breeds its own kind of attitude, if you like, among guys. But maybe your experience might offer a different view, that actually people can be quite generous with themselves.
Yeah, no, it was great. I'm trying to think, during the course of the week, I had Adam Scott, Martin Keimer, Justin Rose, Molinari, obviously Graham McDowell, Harrington, Lowry, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Jeff Ogilvie, they all came up and kind of came out of their way to say well played and
brilliant,
best of luck, or keep your head up, or something like that. So I really found no animosity with any of the players. I thought they were all really...
That says a lot about Paul, though, I think, Gary.
Yeah, it does. But the funny thing about the tour, it's a travelling circus, you know, and everyone, as much as, you know, everyone wants to do well, but and they're very focused on their own games. But guys appreciate it's exceptionally tough game. And guys have good weeks and guys have bad weeks. And there's actually very little jealousy out there. You know, people appreciate how tough the game is. And, you know, you have kind of 20, 30 guys travelling week in, week out. And, you know, they're good, strong bonds. I don't know if they're deep friendships, but there's a genuine respect there that, you know, guys would be just delighted for Paul, the fact that he was doing so well, because people know, you know, golf is all about weeks.
Carl, what was it like following Paul around the last day? Were you a ball of nerves, as most of the rest of us were at home watching?
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, you wanted it to go well for Paul, and obviously the start of the round, you know, definitely unsettled him. I mean, I think, you know, I don't even want to, I think what he did on Sunday was just, you know, I walked around and watched every shot that he hit Sunday, and it was just a special thing to actually witness that someone from you know, Greystones Golf Club was going to be leading the Open into the final round. It was kind of surreal, you know. I think of about 400 photographs of that leaderboard at the end with just Paul's name at the top of it.
Someone that you've coached, like, it's a minor miracle, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's great for the golf club. I mean, the golf club was
unreal.
And all the lads, I have to mention Barry Massey. He said if I didn't mention him tonight, I was in a barn, a shed up at the first tee.
Absolutely. And he would actually do that.
He would, yeah.
He's mad enough.
So the lads were obviously great for junior golf back in the club, you know.
Yeah, well, I went down on the Monday to do the show from there Monday night, and there was about 30 kids running around with golf clubs, and it just was brilliant. As soon as you walk in, you're kind of wondering, and I had heard that Paul up in the bar was sweating like a donkey trying to keep the points going and everything, and that, you know, it was brilliant. But there was the thing that struck me most was the amount of kids that were there, and I just thought, it's fantastic, you know, and that's on the back of what you were doing there. And look, I have to ask you what the future holds in the kind of immediate term, if you don't mind. I mean, is the plan now still to try and play in the Walker Cup team? Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, we have... I'm not sure what my next tournament is yet. It's probably going to be the European Amateur, but yeah, still for me, the plan is to play Walker Cup in September, and once that's finished, I'll turn pro the day after, just like I'd planned to before, and then hopefully just go to Q School, see if I can get through Q School, and hopefully get some invites into some tour events, maybe get my card through making enough money that way. But either way, I'll just kind of take it each week as it comes and keep practicing and see where it gets me.
Proud parents, Collie and Michelle, what do they say to you?
I don't know, but by listening to them, though, they sounded like they were very nervous. I think everyone was more nervous than I was. Everyone asked me, was I nervous?
You know what? I think you're absolutely spot on, because I was looking at you going, why am I shaking here? He should be the one shaking his head there doing it.
Don't get me wrong. I was nervous. Like, everyone gets nervous. But I guess I was kind of focused on what I was doing when I had control over it. And I guess other people didn't have any control over it. So probably a big ball of nerves. But I think Mum and Dad were just more worried about getting into a spot where they could see the shots last day, because it was a bit mental with so many people around, which was brilliant to have all the support.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. But I think the first couple of days they found it easy, you know, to just follow around and they could see everything. And then on the last two rounds, there was just people everywhere.
They should have signs up, Mum and Dad, let us through, get out of the way here. Look, you've just been superb for the last week. It's been a pleasure watching you, and you know, the future is massive. So we just wish you the best of luck with everything, Walker Cup included, and whatever happens after that. Half of the country, and indeed half of Greystones, had you to back to miss or to make the cut of four to Women's Ladbrokes. So we owe you a pint. If you fancy a drink after this, we'll take you for one.
Perfect. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, Paul.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.